Welcome, investigator. Evil is on the rise. Crime is escalating. Our mission is to eliminate the crime by exposing evil, examine why it manifests, and highlight the brave souls that confront it every day. Join us as we work together to bring justice to every victim. Welcome to All Things Crime. Here's your host, Jared Bradley.
Yeah, so moved out. Then I started working at Harley Davidson. This is 2008, 2009. I got. You're talking about the Great Recession. You're talking about, you know, the economy and the dump, layoffs, all of that. I ended up getting laid off, let go from Harley Davidson. And the next real story in my journey that I think is important was when I went back to work in the auto industry, and this was the first time I found something that I was actually good at. Immediately when I got there, I became the number one producer there and was just crushing it. And I had a mentor, my sales manager. He was pouring into me. I mean, again, product of your environment. He was pouring into me. We became like Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. Like, he would call the play. He was the coach, and I would go run the play. Okay. And I'm bringing home the trophy. Boom, boom, boom. Making some serious cash. For being, you know, 23, 24 years old, I was making $150,000 a year, you know, making more than my dad, making more than anybody I knew. I was just, you know, I mean, making a lot of money for that age. And like, bought a house by the time I was 24, you know, and I don't know, it just kind of got me off to a good start. But what I will say, the reason why this is so important in the story was I look back and I go, okay, well, what was it? Where was the shift? Because again, I was still getting in a lot of trouble. I'm still not getting a lot of trouble, but there was still some looseness in there in my early 20s. What shifted? And what shifted was I found a positive place to channel my energy. I found an obsession, a positive obsession. And it was the auto industry. Because for the first time in my life, I found something I was good at. Because remember, I was told I was a screw up. I was told I was never going to amount to nothing. I was, you know, like the cards were kind of stacked up against me. And here I am. Not only am I good at something, but I'm the best. Like, I was dominating in that industry. I was just crushing it. And I was like, so I found something I'm good at. So I dove in. I became a student of this game. And I just was like, obsessed with it. And so people would still call me like, you know, Friday night, you know, hey, you want to come out? Let's go drinking, whatever. I'm like, no, man, are you crazy? Tomorrow's game day. It's Saturday. Tomorrow's game day. Like, I'm going to sell 3 cars, get to do a hat trick tomorrow. You know what I mean? And no, hell no. like, again, I found a positive obsession.
Yeah.
You know, where drugs and alcohol was the positive, where it was a negative obsession.
Yeah.
This was my positive outlet, you know? And so I think that's another important lesson for somebody that's like, okay, you're wanting to change your life. You need to find something to be absolutely obsessed with. What is it? For me, it was the auto industry. What is it for you? What are you passionate about that you can just dive into and just devote all your energy to? Because again, you're putting your energy somewhere.
Oh yeah.
You know? If you're just like, what are you doing with your time? You're going to get high and play video games all day and just hang out and do nothing? What a waste. I think about the time I wasted, you know? Jeez.
Isn't that the truth,
it's
man?
Crazy.
You know, but Trevor, I, as you're telling your story, I'm listening to it and I'm like, you know what? Boys especially, I think, I'm a huge fan of, well, there's a number of people online, but I can't remember who exactly said it, but basically, he was saying it doesn't matter what species it is. If you look at males, young males, if they do not have some kind of a dominant male figure that will keep them in line, it doesn't matter if it's deer, if it's bighorn sheep, bear, whatever. If they do not have that role model that keeps them in line, they will become feral and essentially, you know, even become so feral that they can't even integrate into their society. And I, it's almost like, oh, in fact, a number of years ago, I did a, I don't know what triggered it, but I did a series of episodes on Lord of the Flies. Mm. You know, everybody's familiar with that movie. Mm,
yeah.
And, you know, where you have just these young kids, you know, I don't know.
Just go crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And they, you know, they establish this society initially, but then eventually they start going, you know, moving into these little groups, and eventually they start isolating, you know, the weaker kids. And, you know, by the end of the movie, they're like literally out to kill this kid. So, but that kind of feral type of an attitude all comes from the lack of leadership from some kind of a older male. And it's also interesting, especially in the movie where, you know, I'm sure you've seen the movie where, you know, they're tracking the kid down on the beach and they're about to kill him. And then all of a sudden some adult men show up and just, it's over. You know, it's all of a sudden everything's shifted and they snap out of their feral mindset. Well,
so good.
If you think about your story, and I think most kids that end up in trouble, I bet there's a common denominator, and that is probably that they do not have the guidance that they need to make those kind of decisions. You know, when you're screwing up, you know, you think about all those times when you were 13. If your dad had showed up at that kid's house when you were there to fight him, you know, how different would things have been? You know, would you have kicked down their, you know, the master bedroom door? I would say probably not. You know, and I think about my dad. I mean, he grew up on a ranch in Idaho. And, you know, from the time the kid was 8, he was up at 4 a.m. milking cows and, you know, doing that kind of, you know, the heavy labor stuff that you were talking about when you're painting. And I'm trying to envision myself debating with my dad at the kitchen table about the benefits of weed. And I like,
oh my gosh,
I don't think that wouldn't have gone very well. But
you know, what's interesting about that? It's so funny to me. I think about it now, like my mindset, well, you know, as a 16-year-old to my mindset now. And I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, what an idiot. And like, there were so many arguments that I was like, they should legalize weed and da 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 da. And they're actually doing a lot of this stuff now. You know, there's a lot of states that have legalized it and everything. And so here we are, we're in Texas, where I live is in Texas. And Texas hasn't necessarily legalized it, but they've done something that's kind of interesting where Delta 8, Delta 9, which is, I guess, a strand of hemp or something like that. It's essentially weed. Like, it's weed.
Yeah. Okay.
And you can buy it in these little stores, right? In these stores. So, but it's not like legal like some other places like Colorado or Washington or, you know, some other places. But I've always said this. I'm like, man, I hope they don't do it. I really do. I hope they don't do it. Because it's not that weed itself is so bad. Okay. It's just like, and I think alcohol is awful too. Like, it's not that, again, it's not that weed itself is so bad. It's just that if you make it like accessible like that, and I think especially if people are drinking too, okay, because drinking has become so socialized. It's like, it's at every event, every sporting, everything. It's all over the place. Like, you can't go anywhere without not being alcohol. So alcohol is everywhere. So now all of a sudden, if you throw weed in the mix, like, you combine those two and we got a problem. Mm. Alcohol and weed. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm like, you got a real problem. You put those two together. So anyway, I don't know. I just always was like, as I grew up, I'm like, man, I hope they don't put that here. I hope they don't legalize that here. Honestly.
Yeah.
Which was funny. When I was a kid, I was like, man, I can't wait for this to be legal. Man, yeah, I can't wait.
Do whatever I want. Well, like,
yeah,
know,
like,
The biggest problem is the decision-making process that happens in people's brains. You know, I think about some of the stupid stuff I did as a teenager. And frankly, I have three teenage boys in my house right now. And, you know, thank goodness we're off of, spring break. And they just went back to school this morning. And so, you know, my wife's exhausted and she... I think today's her day off, man, especially with as much as I travel. Nice. She's like, yeah, weeks like last week where the boys are home all day long and, you know, anyway, we usually have 10 teenagers at my house at any given time. And so, you know, extra fridges and all that. But the key is, especially for boys, the decision-making process until you're about 20-something, 22, or, you know, your brain's not even fully developed till you're 25. So with impulse and all these other things, then you mix in some of these, you know, alcohol and weed and stuff, and your ability to actually think through something. You know, one of my sons in particular is, the kid's a crack up, but I'll tell you what, his impulse is so off the charts that if he thinks that it's for some obscure, stupid reason in the back of his head, he thinks it might get him a little attention with, you know, some girls or something, man, he's on it, you know, jumping on a sled, you know, when it's snowing out here. That's that white stuff that falls that, you know, you guys in Texas don't experience very often. But, you know, there's a video of him jumping on a sled like it's a surfboard, and he hits the bottom of the hill, and there's a little jump down there, and it just launches him, and he lands right, you know, he's like flies like 10, 15 feet, lands right on his side, and he's like, oh, you know, rolling around like he's, you know, I mean, that had to hurt. And but again, as a teenager, did I do stupid stuff like that? Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, he's doing stuff like that without the alcohol and the weed.
Right.
And so you start adding all these kind of stuff in it. And it's just, it's not that I, you know, want to criticize anybody that does that. It's just, you can't mix that stuff in and expect people to make smart decisions. It's just, it just doesn't happen.
And I think about what you just said, like, too, I thank God that this did not exist when I was a kid.
Oh, boy.
If this existed, because you're talking about, you know, camera. Oh, my gosh. I would have gotten so much trouble we would have been they would have been awful. I could just think of the stupid stuff I would have done with a camera in my pocket. Oh, my God.
Everybody else is videoing all the stupid stuff you're doing.
Yeah, I can't imagine, like, what do these kids do? Yeah. Like, I know I would be toast. I'd have just been like, I'd have been so screwed.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, drugs and alcohol, you know, that was a thing I had to put down too, you know, growing up. I had to put all that down. And I think back, and I do think this, I guess another thing I'm grateful for is I try to again, you know, look at, okay, what am I grateful for through the experience? Because this was the journey I went through. So one of the things I'm grateful for was I got a lot of those like wild, you know, seeds out early, where a lot of people, you see that even if they have a good family structure, you know, they got the, you know, mom and dad are still together and all that kind of stuff, no divorce. And so they have a very, very, I guess, sheltered kind of a lifestyle. And then when they go to college, a lot of times they make a lot of mistakes and they go off the deep end. I've seen this where kids that were like perfect little kids in high school and everything, boom, they go to college and it's like a free for all, you know, mom and dad aren't around anymore.
Yeah.
And I can do what I want, and they go crazy and they get in a bunch of trouble. But guess what? Now they're adults. Okay. And it's not a slap on the wrist. Okay. Yeah. When I was a kid, again, I did some stupid stuff, and even though, but it was still, you know, I mean, in perspective, I got a slap on the wrist. I'm grateful. And I was able to navigate through it. And yeah, it was a lot of work to get out of that hole, but do that as an adult and see what happens. Do what I did as an adult.
Oh yeah.
And you know what I'm talking about? Like you're going to prison. I look back and I'm like, man, comparatively, like, I'm so grateful that I got a lot of that stupid stuff out as a kid and learn lessons. I got to burn my hand on that stove as a kid and go, ah, crap, I got to burn it over and over and go, yeah. Oh man, that thing hurts. Instead of doing it as an adult and having a permanent scar, you know, and a lot of this stuff, you know, it doesn't impact me when it comes to jobs and things like that. You know what I mean? Like, so grateful that I got to experience some things early rather than later, you know?
Well, and I think one of the most fortunate things for you going through all of that, number one, I think that built a much stronger foundation for who you are today, because you've experienced that. And I think the college kid scenario that you were talking about, those kids growing up in a, what you would assume would be like a stable household, I think the number one problem with the quote, quote, stable households is they do too much for their kids. And again, I can't remember exactly who said it, but they said for especially wealthy people, if you are well off, what's the number one way that you can help your kids? And the guy's response was, don't do too much. Because if you're providing everything for that kid and not making that kid do chores and earn his, you know, earn money, you know, do do extra chores to make more money. It's like, if you want to go to, you know, the convenience store and buy a soda and a chip, well, you better have your own money for that. You better have earned it yourself. Otherwise, too bad. I'm not going to buy that for you. You know, whereas I think there's far too many parents where it's just too easy to just say, oh, you know what? I don't want to fight with this kid. I don't want to hear him complaining all the way. I'll just buy him something. But what I think the mentality that they're establishing and the pattern that they're establishing by doing that is it'll come back to bite them, because then, like you said, once they get out on their own a little bit and they're out from under the thumb of the parents, then they just go crazy. And, you know, a lot of them just totally screw themselves up. But it's...
Yeah, and you got all these other outside influences, all these other kids in college and doing all this other stuff and parties and da-da-da-da-da. And like, you know, I'm glad I didn't... So I didn't really go to college either. I mean, I went to community college for, you know, maybe a semester or two. My dad was one of the things he did is he was like, hey, I'll match you again dollar for dollar, you know, towards college. Mm-hmm. You know, there's community college here. It's, you know, it's pretty affordable, this, that, and the other. And, you know, I barely graduated high school. Let me tell you that right now. School was not my thing. Okay. I barely graduated high school. Didn't care for school that much. And because I just don't like being forced to learn stuff that has no relevancy in the real world. Yeah. Like, I don't need to learn, you know, algebra or, you know, just like, okay, I got a calculator. All right. I don't need to really know that. It's not relevant. I'm sorry. Like, there's so much stuff that don't get me started on school. There's so much stuff they teach you in school that, like, come on, man. Now we got ChatGPT. I don't ever need to know that.
I'm with you, man. I have a daughter that's a freshman in college right now. But starting probably 2 or 3 years ago, I basically said, look, unless you're going to be a lawyer or a doctor, or, you know, an electrical engineer, something specific like that, where you have to have advanced degrees for it, college is a waste of time. And I think about, you know, I went through college, you know, 20 some years ago when, I got a few years on you, buddy. So back then it was a little bit different because a lot of jobs you had to have a degree to get hired. But nowadays, no way. I mean, the crap that they teach you in university, and you're paying them to teach you this crap.
And indoctrinate you on things.
No, I'm the Mike Rowe guy, man. I love Mike Rowe. Everything he says about trade school and, you know, learning a skill. And like you said, it doesn't matter what you do. If you pour your energy into it, you can get successful at it. And you know what? Let's use that as a transition to segue, man. Isn't that the podcast speak?
Let's do a segue.
Yeah, segue into what you're doing now, man.
Well, so again, I was in the auto industry, did that for a few years, kept hitting the glass ceiling there, though, and was very successful. But again, management didn't want to move me up.
Of course not, man. And you're making them bank.
I know. They didn't want to promote me. I wanted to move up, though, and I didn't want to be a car salesman forever. It was like, you know, and so I remember I had to go. Okay. I had to make that decision to leave. And again, leaving something I was the best at. And so I did. I took a leap of faith, jumped into financial services, hit the bottom. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, when you're at the top and you jump, be prepared to hit the bottom, okay? If you're not prepared for that, then you probably shouldn't jump. Be prepared to hit the bottom. I was prepared. I had finances and resources and all that. I took that jump. Man, that parachute didn't open. Just like, hit the bottom. Like, ow, that hurt.
Yeah.
And no, it was rough. My first year in financial services was really, really rough. And I figured out that, okay, I was really good at sales from the auto industry, but there was nobody bringing people into me. Okay. There was no like dealership where people are walking in to talk about their finances. It just doesn't work that way. Like, I got to go out and get it. Okay. So that was the struggle. So I was good at sales, but I wasn't good at marketing. Okay. In the auto industry, they had the commercials, they had all this stuff. So they brought people to me, you know, and I just had to be a great salesperson. So anyway, I get into financial services and again, hit the bottom, wasn't good at the marketing. And so that's what I had to learn. I was like, man, I got to learn this marketing thing. I have to figure out how to, you know, become visible, how to become a thought leader, how to, you know, raise awareness, all these different things. And so I started to learn all that. That's kind of, you know, fast forward, I got a few years later, that's where me and you met, which was the video marketing boot camp that we were going through, because I knew I needed to now take it to video and get on video.
Now this is prior to COVID, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Yeah. And, which was great. It was awesome. I got all those skills right before COVID. So I was ready for it.
Yeah.
And but yeah, so anyways, doing financial services and, you know, let's rewind just a second. So I'm in financial services. Things are kind of rough, going through a hard time, and I'm doing everything. I'm doing all these different networking. I'm going to, you know, the BNI, and I'm going to team referral networking groups, and I'm going to just all these different networking groups. I remember going to American Payroll Association and the HR Association. I remember just going to all these different groups. I'm trying happy hour socials. I'm just trying to get, you know, that's what they teach you. Network. What does that mean? Okay. Like, all right, let me just go to all these networking groups. Nothing was working. I mean, it would work little things here and there.
Yeah.
But man, the effort you'd had to put in to get something to work, and it just wasn't really working consistently. So finally, though, I come across this group, and it's a career transition group. They met at this church, and I go into that group, and I saw and I could identify with these people because, again, 2008, 2009, I got let go from Harley Davidson. And I remember what I went through getting let go. I remember the fear and anxiety and stress and depression, and I actually started drinking again. Okay. I mean, like, it impacted me a lot. It almost threw me off my game. You know, again, I was just transforming my life, right? And like, I got let go, and it could have easily shifted me back in the other direction. Yeah. And I remember that stress and anxiety and fear and depression and all of that. And so I'm walking in this room and I see 100 senior level executives. Okay. And I'm young, and I'm seeing all these extinguished people, like experience, like people I'm intimidated by. Right. Yeah. And I'm like, but they're like down and out and depressed, and their job search was taking them forever, taking them a year, year and a half. One guy was 28 months.
Wow.
And the mental, like, just beat down that they're going through. And so anyways, I go in this room and I identify, like, I'm like, I see myself in them. And I remember what it's like feeling like you're in quicksand. And the harder your struggle, the quicker you sink.
Thanks for joining us. Your attention today brings us one step closer to exposing and eliminating the evil that brings crime to our communities. Hit subscribe and share this episode. Together, we will bring justice to every victim.